Welcome to the Edible Valley Podcast. I am Blaine Prose.
And I'm Jonathan Fraser.
We're here in Murville this afternoon with Kyla Savage and Teresa Newt. The family's been commercial fishing for 25 years?
How many?
30 years?
Yeah, it's been probably,
33.
Yeah, 33.
You're not old enough to have been fishing for that long. So we thought we'd come out and talk a little bit about that and some homesteading stuff. They do lots of gardening, and they have the chickens running around the yard and do lots of preserving.
Beautiful farm out, or garden out back, I see. So
yeah, that's nice here. Very nice property. Why don't you introduce yourselves and just give us a little bio on who you are and what you do.
Alrighty. I'm Teresa Newt, and it's my husband, who's a commercial fisherman, and we went fishing together 30 years ago. He'd been fishing a few years longer than that, and had a romance on the high seas, and of course we love fishing, and then children started coming, and the long and the short of it is I stopped going fishing. And when the kids were old enough, they started being the deckhands. So they've been doing that. We have four children, and they've been deckhanding up until last year.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you were basically born on the boat.
Yeah. Well, the younger days I didn't go out on, but I think my first trip was when I was 12 years old, and my job was to bonk the fish on the head so they'd dive. That's nice, eh? But then I spent 7 seasons straight with my dad fishing. And mainly salmon, tuna. I did a herring trip, a halibut trip. And yeah, it was great. And then I had kids, and it makes it a little bit more difficult.
You can't take the brood on the boat.
No.
We tried. I tried with our oldest daughter, but she slept the whole time.
Yeah.
And then I got worried being a new mom. And then we tried the following spring, and she was wanting to crawl around, and the boat was not a good place. We had the stove right there, and it's like, oh, this isn't going to work.
Danger, danger.
Yeah, we put her in a swing, and she was swinging from the beam, you know, and she was screaming, so it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the boat? Like, what size is
it? It's small. It's 42 foot. It's a classic West Coast wooden troller. It's a double ender. All
right.
And it's yellow and green, so we call it the banana boat.
Can't miss it.
Yeah. It's a freezer boat, and it holds about 10 to 12,000 pounds, I guess.
You can sort of squeak maybe 13.
Yeah, but
that's pushing it.
It's a lot of fish.
Yeah.
And it's a really good seaworthy boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it's small, it's very seaworthy. Mm-hmm. But wooden boats are a lot of work.
Yeah. I worked on a wooden boat for a while, actually. The Maple Leaf, doing charters up and down.
Nice.
The island. So I know about wooden boats, and
yeah,
they are a battle.
Yeah,
they are a battle.
Constant maintenance.
Yes, but they're beautiful. So
they are.
At that, so.
Yeah.
And our boat's 62 years old.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent. Yeah.
It's amazing that they can go forever as long as you keep maintaining them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Just keep plugging away.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
So where on the coast does Tim usually fish?
Well, we have an Area G license, which is the west coast of Vancouver Island.
Okay.
And an Area F, which is the north, around the Queen Charlotte Islands, or Haida Gwaii now.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't actually fished the West Coast for a number of years. He did a little bit last year and this year, but before that, he was always going halibut fishing with a friend who's got a boat. And then up north, he usually starts at the end of June.
Okay.
Middle to end of June, so...
So that's where he's
That's where
now.
He is now, and right. He'll be there till September.
Wow.
Yeah. And over the years, of course, it's changed. Fishermen used to start the season, opened April 15th, and it closed October 15th.
Wow.
And so most guys would be gone most of that time and maybe come home for a few days here or there. And I remember many a year packing up the kids, and Tim was going to come in and sell the fish, and we would go all the way over to Tofino or to Iqaluit for one night of saying hi.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's like crazy drive back, being so tired, but, you know, it was worth it. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, fishing is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's not something you can leave. It's a lifestyle that your whole family has to be part of for it to really be successful.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot like farming in that sense that, you know, you can't just take it and leave it. You can't just clock in and clock out. Once you're there, you're doing it. Yeah.
You have to. Well, you have to be out there to be making money.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, you can't fish from land.
No, and otherwise you have to be maintaining the boat.
Yeah, right.
Especially now when the season's so short, you can't afford to have any breakdowns.
Yeah, of course, really.
Yeah,
and it's long days. I mean, up north, it's anywhere from 15 to 17 hour days, kind of thing. So
yeah, as long as there's daylight out, you're fishing.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much, and it's not easy all the time.
Mm-hmm. Your boat's a troller, right?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Troller. Yeah.
Hook and line.
Hook and line, yeah. So it's more selective than a net fishery would be?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've always thought that the trolling is the one to support because of that.
Yeah.
It's more selective. You can release fish if they're too small or the wrong species or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. It's good. I like the trolling. Plus, you... it's a better quality of fish because it's not bashed around in a net at all.
Right.
And
less bruising.
Yeah. We get more money
per
fish because of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's frozen right away too, which is also really nice because you can, it's not sitting for weeks kind of thing.
Right.
On ice.
It's
frozen right away. So.
Yeah, because the salmon meat can go funny really fast if it's not properly dealt with.
Yeah.
So yeah. I know even fish that I've sport caught and had it in a cooler for a few days, it starts losing that bright orange color and it's just pale and it's...
It goes mushy.
Yeah.
You know,
really
the flesh
mushy.
Goes a bit mushy. And so that's why our fish are generally frozen within an hour of being caught.
Right.
We try to do that. Obviously, if there's a big catch going on, you get them in there as fast as you can.
Right.
But you have to clean them first and bleed them.
Let them bleed for a while.
Right.
And then, put them right in the freezer on the plates.
Cool.
And then we glaze them.
Right.
To protect them from freezer burn.
And explain that process.
Once they're frozen on the plates, then we take a bucket of fresh seawater, salt water, and dip them twice to three times. So we'll dip them once, let them refreeze, and then dip them again, and then dip them one more time so that it's completely coated and the meat is stays fresh that way.
Right, so there's no air. Air can't get to the flesh.
Yeah, or, I mean, things freezer burn so easily, too.
Yeah,
We've had fish that have been glazed in our home freezer for close to a year, and we've thawed them, and there might be a little bit of freezer burn just on the outside part, but the flesh is so firm, just like you caught it.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's a unique way. We like to tell people that if they buy a salmon and they cut it, and there's that flesh exposed, to go home and glaze it.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I know I bought a number of fish off you last year, and they were all excellent. We just ate some, actually, about 20 minutes ago.
Delicious.
Yeah.
So good.
Team effort.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
I was talking with a chef friend of mine that we were commenting about salmon, because we used to be very strict on the freshest, you know, fresh in, caught at sea or whatever, and we're both more turning on to the frozen stuff because it's mostly frozen at sea.
Yeah.
It always seems to be a better quality fish than the stuff that's been out at sea for a couple days before they get it in and it gets transported to the restaurant. So
yeah, it does take a while, really, when you add up all the days. It's longer than you think it is, usually, kind of thing. But yeah.
Say in the restaurant, you've got 2 to 3 days on fish or, you know, to use it up. Mm-hmm. But, you think about that fish is probably 7 days old when you're getting it fresh.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's not really so fresh anymore.
Not so fresh anymore. Yeah, it's really nice to be using like a frozen salmon or like even halibut or whatever. I find it's quite nice just because, first of all, parasites have been killed.
Yeah.
The freezing process, which is always a bonus, so you can serve it a little on the rarer side and feel comfortable about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Years ago, we've gone through a number of ways to sell our fish, and years ago, we used to bring home some fish and sell to the different restaurants that would buy it, and one of the places was a sushi restaurant, and they would only buy troll caught frozen at sea because of that very reason.
Oh, yeah.
It was frozen. They didn't have to worry about anything with the public and that. And also because it was, so fresh when they cut it up. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, cool. Now, does the license on the boat, does that allow you to fish any species or just certain, any species that are open? Or, like, how does that work? I'm not
aware. Yeah, it's limited. So, like, up north right now, it's spring salmon, but only in certain areas.
Right.
So the whole, like, Haida Gwaii area is not open. There's only very specific areas. And it's just open on the AB line, which is the Alaska-BC line right now, Coho and Springs.
Oh, okay.
So those are the only things you're allowed. Oh, and pink salmon, they usually always let you catch pink salmon, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. The most underrated fish there is.
But most other fish... you have to have separate quotas for. So lean cod is now a quota. You can't keep lean cod unless you have lean cod quota. And rockfish. And, halibut. You definitely have to have a halibut quota for halibut.
And does that mean buying a different license?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you need a whole different license. And then on the license, you actually have to buy quota. So however many pounds you have to buy. That for halibut.
Right.
So when we first started fishing, it was an A license for salmon, but an A license stood for everything. You could fish ling cod, you could fish tuna, you could fish salmon and prawns and crab, like the whole thing.
Right.
And then they divided the coast into thirds, the Gulf, the West Coast, and up north, and then they kept diminishing everything so that you needed to buy a crabbing license. You needed to buy a halibut license. Mm-hmm. You needed, so all of a sudden your A license that you originally invested a lot of money for back in the day is hardly worth anything.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
So you have to have like a dozen licenses nowadays.
Catch it all. But in a way it's also good because it's almost more sustainable because the fisheries know exactly how many fish are being caught and where. And
you have to report it, too. Every day you have to report your catch, how many fish you caught, what area you caught. And that way, I think all fishermen are happy to err on the side of conservation. However, it's so difficult to manage the fisheries just because you just never know what's going on out there. You expect a big run to come through because there were a lot of escape fish. Like, these are four-year fish that Tim's fishing for now. So you think 4 years ago, if it was a good escapement and, everything looked healthy, lots of eggs being laid, all that kind of stuff, that the return is going to be good. And that's not always the case. And also the opposite is the case, where you think it's going to be a poor fishery, and then you wonder, where did all these fish come from?
Right.
It's
sounds
really
like gambling.
Yeah, it is. You hope for the best, but there's so many different factors in it. Like something like a really big windstorm way off seas that just blow up all the bottom plankton and the feed and everything, and that can produce a really good year of spring salmon or other salmon. So it's just yeah, you just never know. You're fishing. You're not catching. Yeah. You're fishing.
Yeah, it was like the run of sockeye in the Fraser a couple years ago.
Absolutely.
Like, that was unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah, it was huge.
We didn't have a license for that one.
Yeah, it's. I've always been a conservationist, and I've always been interested in the cycles of the salmon and stuff like that. So, not always been big about commercial fishing, but I've always thought trolling, if there needs to be commercial fishing, then trolling is the way to do it because of the, you know, you can release the fish that aren't, you know, on your license and stuff. So,
yeah.
And it's more, I think it's more humane for the fish. They're not trapped in a net and having a panic attack and.
They kind of have a choice.
Yeah, they just shake their head really hard. But, yeah, no, I just think it's, like, I just think that's the good way to do it, so.
Yeah, it is. It's hard work, for sure.
Yeah.
Would you find it's more difficult now with the regulations and stuff, or is it, it's always the same, isn't it?
The actual procedure of fishing's the same.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Setting the gear, pulling the gear up. Maybe in some ways a little easier in terms of how technology has helped a bit, but any fisherman who's been on the coast for a number of years knows the spots where traditionally there's been good fishing.
Right.
And so that has always worked. But with new sounders, that kind of equipment, it's maybe been a little easier to find. You look for big balls of feed, and hopefully there's fish there.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit different, too, with a lot of the quota systems, because you have a certain amount of time to catch a fish. It's not just, like, the race like it used to be, where everyone was there opening day, and they close it down as soon as they thought the fish was caught. Now, especially in halibut, more so, you have until March, until... I don't know if it's September, October or something, to catch the fish.
Right.
And you just, yeah, they know how many fish are allowed to be caught that year and how many fish will be caught, kind of thing, because of the quotas.
Right.
Yeah, that race thing. I remember when I was younger, I was in Bella Coola.
Yeah.
And they had the ferry hat. They had the opening was in the middle of the harbor there or something crazy.
Yeah.
And the ferry had to leave. And basically, so the ferry left and the boats just split apart, and literally in the wake of the ferry boat, the boats
went back together.
And I just thought, this is crazy. I was on a Navy ship, actually. I was with Sea Cadets on the Oriole. So we were following this ferry boat out, and it was like a panic to get the boat going as fast as possible to follow this
ferry. To follow it so you could get through.
Just because these boats were coming across. Like, we gotta catch fish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it can be pretty crazy. That, and also nowadays, there's actually, compared to how many fishermen used to be, there's limited fishermen now. It's a very small amount compared to...
On the Pacific.
Yeah. It's the fleet's actually not very big at all, especially for trawlers now.
When I was in Petersburg, Alaska last summer, and we pulled in there on the ferry, and it reminded me of what it was like around here 30 years ago. There was fishing boats everywhere.
Yeah.
The docks, there was multiple docks, all full of fish. There was packing houses and canneries, the whole deal right there. I was kind of blown away by it.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about what's happened on the coast here.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. And lots of reasons, I guess. Quite often, Canada will look at the Alaskan fishery, for example, wondering why is their fishery still very, very good. And I think one of the things that have come out is that they don't have fish farms, and they still have virgin timber along the streams.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so wondering...
Well, there's not nearly the development anywhere in Alaska like there is here. I mean, the Fraser River is the biggest salmon river in the world, but look at it.
too many condos.
Too many condos and pulp mills and everything else upriver, like all the way to the headwaters, basically.
Yeah.
So,
it's not
the best, that's for sure.
Yeah, and mining in the Skeena headwaters and the Stikine and the Nass and all that, Just a lot of development happening in mining and energy.
Not very well planned.
No, and Alaska values their wild salmon. I was talking to the people I stayed with there. Every person who lives in Alaska is allowed a food fishery allowance every year of something like 25 coho and 10 springs or something like that.
Wow.
And that's just because you're a resident, you don't have to buy a special license.
Yeah.
And you can catch them any way you want. Line and reel, whatever. Doesn't matter.
Wow.
But every resident is allowed that.
Wow.
So.
That's neat.
That is neat.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So. Fill your freezer.
Alaska's a neat place like that, but.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, it's just different that way because of that. You know, it's a wild country still up there. Favorite ways to cook salmon?
Well, we have a good old standby that we use, and it's we take 1/3 soy sauce to 2/3 of water. We've already filleted the fish, and lots and lots and lots of garlic. Yep. And we just marinate it for 1.5 to 2 hours and barbecue it. Not overcook it, just until it's still a bit raw on the inside, and then in the middle part, and when you take it off, it still tends to cook a little bit, just like candy.
Seems to be a favorite of anyone who comes to visit.
Yeah.
That's for sure. It's good.
Yeah, it's simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need to do much with salmon.
Really, you don't. No, yeah. Just adding a little bit of flavor here, just a little accent to what's already there is great.
So. Yeah, my dad actually, we started eating quite a few pink salmon. He feels they're like the most underrated fish ever.
And it's protein, and right? It's good for you. Absolutely. Lots of oil and all that.
I don't know. It's been delicious, actually. I really have started enjoying the pink salmon, too.
Yeah, there's nothing, I've always thought that, too. There's nothing wrong with pink salmon. It's just the way you prepare it. And it cooks very fast. It works great in the smoker. It's great for canning.
We can ours up, too. Yeah.
It's actually, it's really cheap meat.
Yeah, like, it is.
It's
for sure.
Definitely doable.
And like I was saying to Teresa earlier when we were met picking berries, just so happens this morning, that I smoke my pink just slightly before I can it just to give it a little extra flavor.
Yeah.
It works out really well.
Yeah, so. It's good.
Yeah, it adds a nice taste when you pop the can lid.
Yeah.
It's like, woo!
Yeah. And I also like to make kind of a honey garlic chanterelle.
Oh, yeah.
And have that
yes.
with some salmon with maple syrup.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the way, thank you for those mushrooms last year.
Oh, you're welcome. Hopefully I'll get you some. You never promised them. Mushroom picking's like fishing. You're mushroom hunting.
Yeah.
Mushroom picking.
That's good.
So, where do you sell your fish? Where's the...
Mostly, we have... We have a company based out of Victoria is one, and the other one is out of Vancouver. And one is called Organic Ocean, and the other is called Frozen at Sea, FAS Fish. And they are buyers of our fish. And one of those companies mostly distributes them locally in Vancouver to restaurants, to I think it's mostly just locally. And the other one had some connections overseas at some point. But I think that they have become more local, too. Originally, all our troll-caught frozen at sea salmon went overseas to Britain, to France, Japan bought some as well. And because of the quality, they were export, fish.
Right.
So, yeah.
That, or we also do, like, we do take orders for people, but we found, like, it's hard trying to sell them all out of your house kind of thing.
Yeah.
You definitely need to find a different market for them as well.
We've got some now, some springs now, because Tim was fishing off the West Coast, and I had gone up for a visit because the weather was bad, and then it was going to stay open, but it closed, and so we had these...
I think it was only 22 fish on board. So it's really difficult. You're not going to sell those to a buyer when you're in Cole Harbor.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Buyer's close by Cole Harbor.
So we brought those ones home. And at the end of the season, we have sold off the boat at the end of the season.
At the dock, Comox Dock.
Worked out. It was always fun, but Tim is just exhausted at the end of the season.
Yeah, I imagine.
And you have to keep the freezer running, right? So you're committed every day to go and check things. But that was okay. That worked for coho and for tuna and for pinks. But we hope this year, like, we can bring some coho and some pinks home to sell. Yeah.
Well, I'll be putting an order in.
Well, and you, John?
I should.
Yeah, okay.
Like I mentioned today when we were berry picking too, about the cost of owning a boat and actually going out and catching your own fish.
Mm.
People think, oh, it's free food, but there's no way. Like, you got to spend a lot of money to go out and catch one, maybe two fish if a seal doesn't take it.
Yes.
Where I can come here, I can spend what it would cost me 1 month's ownership of a boat, load my car up with fish, and good for the year, you know?
Yeah.
To me, it just makes more sense.
Yeah, boats are expensive.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. This is that story, the 2 times you're happy with your boats, the day you buy it, the day you sell it. And tuna, I know Estevan tuna, I buy their products sometimes. Mm-hmm. How far offshore do you have to go to get the tuna?
Depends what time of the year. The Americans didn't renew the tuna treaty this year with the Canadian fishermen. So Canadian tuna fishermen cannot go down to Oregon and then follow the fish up, which is normally what happens. Obviously, there's fishermen that go way offshore, to Hawaii and Tahiti and all around those areas. But the tuna offshore are... It varies, like 60 miles. Sometimes they're in a little bit closer.
Or
they follow warm water.
Right.
So
wherever the warm water.
Wherever the edge is. Like, like 5 years ago or something, I think they were 8 miles off of Haida Gwaii or something.
Oh, wow.
Like, really close.
Yeah.
So, it all depends. Other times in the past, we've gone off of California and Oregon, like 100 miles kind of thing. And
isn't great in our little boat.
Yeah, I would say
you put the storm windows up because you'll never make it in.
Yeah.
And especially fishing down there, there's no nice little anchorage to go.
Yeah,
you have to go down a river to find a harbor, and it's not like our coastline here, so there's not many places to try to make a run for it.
Right, it's pretty open all along that coastline, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's better to have a big boat if you're tuna fishing.
Yeah, I always wondered that.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like tuna is something that we have in BC, but when you start seeing it showing up and it's caught by a BC fisherman, then... So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of the time, like, in August and stuff, you will find it off of Euclid, Tofino area, way out, and you can catch tuna in BC waters. It's just, and I think a lot of people this year probably will be doing that.
Yeah, probably.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's good, though.
Well, I know tuna's definitely something that's jumped onto a lot of menus in a lot of restaurants, and it was something that, like, the albacore tuna, most people didn't even know about it about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of restaurateurs didn't. And so it's jumped onto my menu huge.
It's
quite a bit now. Like, I'm going through.
Oh, it's delicious.
30 pounds a week now. So it's a great fish. And it's fun to... It's pretty bland, so it sort of picks up flavors really well. So
you
can pretty much do anything and... nice and rare.
So many good recipes for tuna as well.
Yeah.
Where do you get your tuna?
I am going through a distributor right now, actually. I have two people, actually. I do buy from Lyle Pierce.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Nice.
Yeah, I get my salmon from Lyle right now.
Yeah.
And that, so his wife parks behind the cafe every day, so.
To get a coffee, right?
She works downtown, so her car is always there. So I'm like, hey, Kim, more salmon, please. And get some tuna, so.
Oh, that's perfect.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Good.
So there, it's fun to use the get the local connection. And
it is. Yeah, it's really good to do for sure.
So tell us about some gardening and homesteading stuff you're doing. You've been pretty self-sufficient here for
because we were talking when we showed up about the Russ's idea. Our friend Russ wants to do this $100 a month challenge that the people of the Comox Valley to spend money in their own community.
Yeah.
And we were talking about you, and you said it might be a little tough. You've already got your fish.
Yeah.
You've got the garden and the chickens.
Yeah. For the summer months, it is hard because whatever is growing in the garden, we eat it. So often we don't go and buy. Like, we're probably not the biggest supporters of farmers market because we eat all our own stuff and not have to buy a kind of thing. Unfortunately,
you're more you're more of a seller than a buyer because of your salmon. So
yeah, exactly.
Sense. Yeah,
and we do really try hard to promote the farmers market. Yes, to people we know.
Yeah, no, definitely. But we do. Yeah, we try to grow from May until September, October kind of thing. We'll be growing greens, and we try to grow enough beans and to can beets. Mm-hmm. We have leeks and kale, and for
squash
the winter,
and
squash.
Cucumbers for pickles.
Cucumbers.
Yeah.
I remember hearing Kyle talking about cucumbers last year.
Oh, we still have cases of cucumbers pickles, you know? It's like, oh. So this year, we're not growing too many of those. I've always thought it important when my kids were little, to feed them really wholesome, good food. I've always had an interest in nutrition, mm-hmm. and I've never been a big supporter of processed foods, although at times I've certainly used it.
Yeah.
So we have tried to grow as much of our food as we can.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always have... We have enough chicken, usually, and enough salmon, and we haven't done our own beef, but we get it locally.
Right.
So we have our protein staples that way. We've bought organic rice and organic beans, like pinto beans and garbanzo beans, and we can them ourselves, buy a big sack, and then we'll can those.
Right.
Just because we know they're organic, well, we hope they are, and then, you know, we know what's going into it.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
And
we have our own eggs. And yeah, we do. We grow our own chickens, our meat birds.
Right.
And
we make our own bread, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Although
we grind your own flour, you're saying?
Yeah.
We try to. Yeah. Although a lot of time I'll be like, oh.
I know. Sometimes you just go, I'm tired today.
Yeah. But, for the most part, we try to. Yeah, grow stuff and eat it.
Keep it in-house.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's just fun. And it's also interesting to the kids. My grandchildren now are getting interested in being in the garden and doing that. When I had my garden years ago, because Tim was always away during the summer, so I had four little kids and by myself and trying to... I always took on these big projects, like plant a huge garden that I'd never be able to keep up, but I did.
Yeah.
I was pulling weeds all the time. I know something's in here. So my kids had to help in the garden for a little while when they were younger anyways, and it's just been... But now that Kyla's and her family are living with us, she's loved gardening as well. And so with both of us, this is like a phenomenal year this year.
Yeah.
Very proud of... Good job, Kyle.
Good teamwork.
It's been good. We've tried making little fish teas for the peppers and the cucumbers, mm-hmm. and see if that works.
And lots of composting.
Yeah.
Compost year round, and
yeah.
seaweed and... Yeah, and we do use a whole bunch of the fish products for,
you
know, natural fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good. It's kind of I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it now we fun. Have sheep. We used to have goats, and we would eat the goats and milk the goats. But the kids are going. It got bad when I was having to disguise, you know, goat burger, and they go, "This is goat burger, isn't it?" It's like, "Oh, this is goat's milk, isn't it?" Yeah. It's like, "Okay, forget the goats." But they were great for clearing.
Yeah.
And now we've got two little lambs. And they're not for meat. It's always been something I've wanted to do, spin and make myself a sweater for a change.
So you're going to be able to get your own fleece.
That's the hope. Yeah.
Cool.
Really cool.
So but how large a property do you have here?
We have 5.5 acres.
Oh, 5.5 acres. So.
But really, the back part, there's nothing. It's just trees and bush.
Woodland?
Yeah, nice. For the most part. A little bit of grass here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's got potential for going bigger, but that's a whole lot more work.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, our first guest, Brian McCormick, who lives next door to John, he has just a city lot, and it's amazing what he's doing there with one greenhouse and about 4 garden beds and a couple of fruit trees, and he just... all winter he has greens and
good for him.
I don't bother growing because I can't I try. I really do,
but John, I think your thumb's going green.
He doesn't have time to garden.
I get the plants in there and then they sort of, I forget to water them, so
that's my biggest
battle. But I have Ryan next door who loves his garden, and so I buy my greens off him because he's got enough to supply both our families, so and probably more than enough, because I think I usually end up giving a bag away once in a while just because I've got too much.
There's lots of people around that just do small greens and, you know, just eggs when they have it kind of thing, but it's amazing how much produce people actually grow around here.
It's a lot. It's a great climate for it.
Definitely.
Well, that's part of the podcast.
Exactly.
We know all these people growing all this stuff and nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
So I get that voice out there.
Yeah. We've often thought, or at least this year, especially Mom and I have talked about how neat it would be just in our neighborhood. And there's quite a few people that do have nice gardens, but there's lots of people that don't.
Right.
And how neat it would be to supply or just sell to our neighbors only, rather than going huge and big if we have any extras of anything to be able to have that available to them kind of thing.
Do like a community CSA or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just your neighborhood and...
Yeah.
People can pay something and you give them a basket every week or something like that. No, that's a great idea.
You do trade. One grows tomatoes, the other one grows greens. Trade and barter.
It's a good system.
It is.
Going back to the way it was 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is, I fully support any initiatives like that.
It's a pretty close neighborhood here anyways. I think a lot of people are open to that, and a lot of people do that on a regular basis.
For sure.
So it's kind of neat. It's community.
It's
great.
We have one road in and the same road out.
Everybody can be blocked in here.
That's right.
Or I guess outsiders can be blocked out. Nobody's allowed. I guess that pretty much wraps up. I have one more question. I asked Megan Halstead this question last week. And quick answer, how many pairs of gumboots do you own?
Ooh.
Well, I own two myself, but I think there's probably about 7 to 8 pairs outside the doors usually at all times.
That's my guess. And generally, there's another 3 or 4 pairs on the boat.
Right.
And there's a couple of pairs in the shop.
Merville.
It is the gumboot country.
That's right. That's good. And if people want to buy product off you, you have signs I see out on the road. So if you're heading towards Merville and you head down Coleman and follow the signs, the first signs on left road, is it? So just follow the signs and...
Or we're the only newt in the phone book.
Right.
N-O-O-T.
So right now it's spring salmon, and hopefully in the fall we'll have maybe a bit of tuna and coho and
Thanks.
Great. Well, I look forward to come shopping in September.
Yay!
Loading up.
Yeah.
Then I can get to work with my processing and canning and smoking.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, all right. Well, do you have anything else, John?
I think we're good.
Okay.
Good.
Then thank you for having us out.
Yeah.
Mm. Thanks for coming. Great, so. And I'm excited to what you guys are doing here. It's neat.
Yeah.
Good.
Really good.
Thank you.
Really good.
Yeah. Okay. That's it for this episode. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.